Bienvenue à Les Affaires Brassicole, votre balado sur l'entrepreneuriat brassicole du Québec, avec Leonardo Calcagno de Baron Mag.
Bonjour tout le monde, ici Leonardo Calcagno de Baron Mag et bienvenue à notre nouvelle série sur les médias d'affaires de boissons. Comme vous savez, Baron Mag est un média d'affaires qui parle de ce qui se passe à travers, bien sûr, l'industrie de la boisson du Québec, de la bière, à travers le Canada, en français et en anglais. Puis, bien sûr, on suit beaucoup ce qui se passe à travers le monde. Nous autres, ça fait un bout de temps qu'on voulait faire cette série parce qu'on voulait vraiment comprendre ce qui se passe à travers l'écosystème que nous, on est. C'est un écosystème très niche, un écosystème de beaucoup d'analyses, beaucoup de monde qui travaille très fort pour comprendre un peu ce qui se passe en arrière de votre bière ou votre Coca-Cola ou votre boisson. J'ai eu la chance de parler avec beaucoup de monde que j'apprécie beaucoup, que je suis quotidiennement. Nous allons dans cette série parler avec du monde des compagnies comme Brewbound, un gros magazine américain, ou des journalistes indépendants qui font ce contenu-là. Puis bien sûr, parler avec des nouveaux magazines, que ce soit numériques, que ce soit en papier, des journaux, tout ça, puis des chroniqueurs, pour comprendre un peu ce qui se passe dans leur marché à eux autres, la tendance internationale, puis tout ça. Donc, merci beaucoup de suivre cette série. Si vous avez des questions, toujours leonardo@baronmag.com. Si vous voulez appuyer notre travail, s'il vous plaît, allez sur baronmag.com. Puis bien sûr, allez sur notre infolettre. C'est la meilleure façon de nous suivre. Puis bien sûr, tranquillement, on aimerait sortir des réseaux sociaux pour aller parler directement avec vous. Puis bien sûr, appuyez-nous en achetant notre magazine, le nouveau, de Les Affaires Brassicoles / Boisson Québec. Puis continuez à nous suivre comme toujours. Merci beaucoup et bonne écoute.
Justin Kendall, and I'm the editor of Brewbound.
Excellent. Justin, like I was telling you before, we're a big fan here at the office. We follow everything you guys do. We listen to your podcast every week, twice a week sometimes. And I just want to say thank you very much for taking your time here, besides all the errors what's going on online. But thank you very much for your time, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it.
The first idea I want to talk to you is the idea we're doing a couple of interviews across the world about media and B2B media. You are a very strong B2B media. And before we start talking about, you know, the kind of content you guys do, kind of work and how everything goes together, can you tell us about this, you know, your what's Brewbound and BevNet and how does it work and everything together?
Brewbound is a multimedia beer industry trade publication, but we've had to evolve as the beer categories evolve to cover more beverage alcohol, as hard seltzers and spirits-based canned cocktails and hard kombuchas and meads and all kinds of different products came in. We've started to cover those items as well. We have an insider site that is subscription-based. It's a really focused on the industry. So coverage of breaking news, people moves, transactions, distribution moves, those sort of things. Lots of data. So we try to cover all that. And then we do events, we do a podcast, we sometimes do video interviews. So yeah, we've got a lot going on. And then our parent company is BevNet, which is an overarching company as well as a non-alcoholic focused trade publication. So energy drinks, all kinds of different stuff there.
So how big is the team in Brewbound? Because I hear a couple of times, I hear a couple of sometimes talking, you know, people doing interviews like that, but how big is the industry? Because in the US, it's a lot of, we get a lot of like newsletters and stuff like that, but you guys must be getting tons of stuff on a daily basis.
Yeah, there are three reporters, editors on the Brewbound site. So it's myself, Zoe Licata, and Jess Infante. And Jess has been out on maternity leave, so it's just me and Zoe in the interim. And then the overall company, BevNet, probably has, I don't know, 30 to 40 employees.
Impressive.
So, yeah. So that includes, like, you know, back of office people, then the other publications, BevNet and Nosh, which is a natural organic food publication.
Excellent. So as a B2B magazine, as you know, for me, I was talking to a brewer and I was like, the good thing about, you know, like doing B2B is like a telenovela, you know, like every 2 seconds, there's things changing, there's drama and stuff like that. And it was better. I come from a more punk magazine, you know, like, industry, and I came into the into the beverage industry, and I it was more fun than anything that I've seen. I mean, changed every 2 minutes. I mean, only the anchor brewing drama. It's like, dude, man, when is that show? I want that show right now, man. So how does it work with you guys when you start working on, you know, like having all this information coming to you every 2 seconds? How do you, you know, how you say this is something that we need? Because at the end of the day, people need everything pretty much, you know, like from distribution points or like that. How do you funnel all the everything that you need for the industry? Plus you get people paying every, you know, daily basis what's happening. So how do you keep everything on the funnel?
Yeah, it's not easy. I don't have a good answer for that, because a lot of times we're just running the entire time. Like last week, it was the Tilray acquisition of 8 craft brands from Anheuser-Busch. And that's a drop everything you're doing and you know, get to work on it. And that's what Zoe and I did. And then, you know, like the anchor drama, you mentioned that. So it's staying on top of that. It's staying on top of, you know, what's happening in Maui, with what Garrett Marrero from Maui Brewing's doing to help the folks there affected by wildfires. It's just nonstop. So it's hard to distill it down. And we try to do the best we can with it, but it's, you know, it's hard to be comprehensive.
Yeah, it's true. So, but people that go to your site, when you go to, like, an insider, what kind of questions they're looking for? What kind of answers they're looking for? Because us and ourselves, when we do B2B stuff, like we have our newsletter for only for the B2B, kind of like insider like that, and they're looking with this kind of information. Also, what kind of information are they looking there when people are paying good money to be there? I mean, yeah, you give them, you know, what's happening, the telenovela thing I'm saying right now. How do you go after, you know, like to make sure that everything is there? Do you have different channels for different needs for the market?
Yeah, I mean, there's 10,000 craft breweries in the U.S. or near 10,000. So, and they're of various sizes. So they're all going to have different needs, and it's hard to meet all those different need states. And I think, you know, one of the underlying things that all of them want is data, that they want to know what's happening out in the market. So that's one thing that we try to prioritize. I think they want to know what some of the heavy hitters are doing. Like yesterday I was on the Sierra Nevada distributor meeting. So people want to know what they're doing, where their focus is, what their innovation program looks like. They want to know what's next. They want to know what are sort of the trends, the styles, the new products that people are getting into.
So what are they getting into? Are they going into a ranch water, spiked donut, drinks, the crazy stuff like that?
Sierra Nevada is going to do some non-alcoholic beers. So they're finally getting into that space. They're expanding through hop water, and then they see opportunity in day drinking. So they have a brand called Strange Beast that started out as a hard kombucha brand, but they pivoted to be sort of a wine-based mimosa brand last year. And so they're going to build off of that, because they think that they can make some new occasions with and meet day drinkers where they are, such as brunch and those sort of things.
So people get sort of the mimosa kind of crowd pretty much.
Yeah, White Sangria is the brand that they're launching alongside Mimosa. So they're trying to get that day part in there.
Okay, so pretty much we're going to college drinking, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's what we do, college drinking in the middle of the day. One of the things that when I sometimes we feature your articles on our site, stuff like that, and when we start talking to people, we have a lot of like smaller players, like a smaller new breweries and companies like that. And the question they always ask me is like, it's great to know what big companies are doing right now, and stuff like that, but how does it affect my business? Because I don't have that kind of money to go into the mimosa kind of drink and stuff like that. So how do small brewers or smaller companies like that can take that information and do something about it? Because as you know, they invest a lot of money in doing their IPA like everybody does, and afterwards they try to shift to that and go into RTD, stuff like that. So when we get that kind of data, what kind of things they can do, you know, to make sure that they continue their business?
So I think part of it is that data piece, to see how different styles are performing, how different segments are performing, how, you know, beyond just like scans and all of that, it's getting some of the feedback on premise from firms like CGA, which is like a Nielsen's on-premise arm, or point of sale data, trying to dive into some of the things and trends that Arrived puts out there, or even Untappd when they can give you some like check-in data. So I think that helps to drill down at like at the brewery level. Bart Watson from the Brewers Association does a great job of sort of speaking to small brewers too, and sort of setting up what the market looks like, and even breaking things out to where, you know, they can see the data at their level.
Excellent. How long have you been doing the Brewbound pretty much as an editor, pretty much?
6 or 7 years, I think it is.
So you see the fast pace of changing of content pretty much this is daily. I mean, I remember watching you when you were doing the live podcast, the video podcast during the pandemic. I remember that, seeing that and stuff like that. So how much of your content has changed and the way you see content for brewers? And I mean, like I was telling you, telling me about data, stuff like that. But you know, when you started doing your content 6 years ago to now, and how you change your views, the way, you know, people need to embrace that kind of content on a daily basis.
Yeah, like when I started, it was a lot of expansion stories, and then it became contraction stories, and then we had the pandemic, and so it became, you know, survival stories and that sort of thing. It's evolved from, you know, I was just writing stories, you know, and we're putting out a newsletter and just, you know, click and send, and it would send every day, to now we try and create a daily digest basically with the newsletter, where you can scan it, you can get a quick read on today's top stories, or the, you know, the latest news, and you know, have a quick read. If you don't want to go to the website, you don't have to read a 1,000-word story or something. You can get, you know, the gist of things, if because everything's so fast moving.
Yeah.
And I think some of the best things we've done are, you know, the podcast, sort of getting out there in front of people, and that's outside the paywall. That's free. We do interviews, we talk to people, then, you know, we meet people through our like Brew Talks programming. So that's another way we try and like tackle an issue on each of those. The next one, we're going to focus on draft. Like, draft has not come back to the point of where it was pre-pandemic. So what does that sort of shape up on a national basis? And what's that look like regionally as well? So we try to tackle some of those and give some takeaways, and, you know, talk to industry leaders and see if they can provide some advice. You know, we try and engage wholesalers and retailers to get their perspective as well. And I think those are some of the most valuable conversations we have, are the retail wholesale conversations, because you can really get a sense of, you know, where the market's moving, what they're looking for, what they want.
Honestly, man, I miss more podcasts from you guys. I would love to have a daily podcast from you guys. I know it's a lot of work, because I do 6 podcasts a week, and it's a lot of work, but I miss you guys doing more podcasts to get more. I would love to have you do more analysis.
Yeah, I'd like to do more podcasts too. I miss doing like the weekly live shows, to be honest with you. I thought those were the most fun. They were the most stressful and sometimes the most challenging, because not everybody's got a great connection. But, you know, when we were getting live questions, or we were taking live questions from people, and, you know, that was, you know, the pandemic sucked, but one of the things that I remember is just trying to talk to business leaders throughout that and get some real-time feedback on what they were experiencing.
So pretty much that's something that you, that was like, it was very commando. I remember seeing you guys, it was a very commando setting at home doing all that stuff. And it's good, because I remember when we started doing podcasts during the pandemic, we were doing once a week, and then we started doing like 3 times a week and 4 times a week, and people start getting there. Do people more and more want podcasts than the B2B thing, or is newsletter the strongest thing right now?
I think it's a mix. I think they want a mix. But, you know, I hear a lot about the podcast when I'm out in the field, which always surprises me. And that's awesome to hear, because it's one of the most fun things we get to do every week, is just kind of sit down and chat about things. But yeah, like I think they want a mix. And honestly, I don't know that they want video at this point, because at least through like a platform like ours, like I question it, and I'd like to, you know, hear some opinions on that, because I don't know that people have time to sit with it like they did 100%. In 2020.
100% I'm with you, man. 100%. I see video as something interesting to do sometimes, but I'd rather people consume here in Quebec, pretty much they are our readers, our B2B readers, is that they download everything, and they go when they're doing brewing, or when they go distribution or whatever, stuff like that, or they go into the gym. That's what they told me when they go to the gym. I don't believe them, man, because I see their so I don't believe the gym. But I know that they tell me that they pretty much download everything, and that's what they do, is like they listen to it and they're like, okay. And that's why we get a lot of analysis questions, like, can you please analyze more? And that's where we start writing more articles. But I get people doing that. So I don't know what that kind of conception people are doing right now with your podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that people are listening to it while they're out on the drive or something like that, or while they're out in the field. So those are always the most rewarding to hear, is like, wow, you chose to listen to us rather than whatever, you know, there are a million podcasts out there. So.
Excellent. So how do you see yourself? Like, how you see Brewbound expanding more as content? When is the Spanish, first of all, when is the Spanish Brewbound, man? Because you guys are getting more and more Spanish. I'm surprised you guys don't have a Spanish side yet. But how do you see a Brewbound is expanding for more content? I was talking to a lot of different magazines, and they were telling me, look, man, the market is kind of weird right now. People want to go into B2C, B2B. Some people are expanding to B2B more, and they want to do more content. And there's like more people asking us to do more analysis, stuff like that. Where do you see Brewbound like in 5 years, stuff like that? And when is the Spanish Brewbound?
I wish I had answers for that. It's funny, because when I took the editor job a couple of years into being here, Lester Jones from the NBWA said to me, like, what are you going to do next? Or like, what do you want to do? And I didn't have any answers. So I don't have any good answers for that right now. I mean, I would like to see more of a focus, like you said. I'd like to see us do more podcasts. I'd like to see, you know, an expansion of what we do in that realm, because I think that's our greatest outreach. I think, you know, we have to look at what we're doing as far as live events go. I'd like to do live podcasts. I think that would be one area that we could really do well in, because we've done a Brew Talk series, but if we did it more so for the podcast, I think that might be a better driver for us. I just said that we probably, you know, like, I don't see the video working out at this point, but yeah. Just look at how huge YouTube is. I think that eventually it's going to be a bigger part of what we do, and I don't know what that looks like yet. And that's partly because I'm tired, to be honest with you. Like, Zoe and I have been running pretty nonstop since June 1st, and you know, like, it's been hard to take time off and think, but I don't know. Like, I'm excited about what we're doing now, because we've got our next evolution of the newsletter, where it used to be just like a couple of headlines and some jobs and some press releases. And now it's not that. Like, if you're a Brewbound insider, you're, like I said, you're getting a digest of what's going on. And I think that could evolve to where we're being, could it be a couple times a day? Maybe in the right circumstances, you know, I don't know, but I think that we're just getting started with that and making that more of a focus. And then I think that we can open more doors from there.
Yeah. Cause I know a Japanese company, Japanese news media, they have like 3 publications a day. And they print 3 times a day, one at the morning, the afternoon, and night. And there's different content. They have a B2B section also, where they do stuff like that. Like, they know the morning people will read that, at night they do that. One of the questions I also wanted to ask is, how do you lead your newsletter? Because when you write a newsletter, you're like, okay, that's how do you do the more like the architecture of your newsletter. How do you work on that to make sure that you write to make sure that people are reading? Do you go first, like, just highlights, and afterward the big question: how do you start writing down, and how you move that kind of newsletter for people to read?
I mean, we talk about it. Jess and I talk about what we think could lead the newsletter. You know, there are days that I have an idea that I don't think, you know, is meaty enough for that. Sometimes the day just dictates it. I mean, you can't plan for like a Tilray to acquire eight brands, really, you know? So, you know, there's that, you know, or, you know, sometimes we do work on talking to people. So, you know, we'll try and have like some evergreen features, but, you know, we're a small staff. So a lot of times, you know, we're just trying to make the best of each day.
Dude, that when I talked to people, when I told people I was going to do an interview with Brewbound, in their mind, you guys are like 150 people working day long, just throwing content in every 2 seconds everywhere, building newsletter. People believe you're kind of like eggshells or stuff like that. That's what people believe, man.
Yeah, I hate to dispel that notion that we're just three people, but yeah, we're just three people.
So how does the content featured with the works with the advertisers? Do you have a pressure of the advertiser sometimes, or is it something that you work on? Like we also try also to balance that thing when it happens. But how does the daily content that you could do, because we're a B2B magazine, we're a trade publication at the end of the day, so we have to start thinking about, you know, how to make money, how to make money, or you guys are separation of church and state?
Yeah, we have that separation. So we have there's a sales team for BevNet that takes on all of that, and we're pretty well firewalled from any of that, you know? So I can't really speak to any of that.
That's good, man. That's very good. So
I'd be even more tired if I had to worry about that.
Yeah, because it is me. We're alone doing the, by the way, we're only two people here doing everything. So it's kind of crazy. Although we have to sell, and firewall is very, very hard for us to do stuff like that. So as 7 years ago, when you started doing your Brewbound, working on stuff like that, the changing of all everything like that, the people are looking for, are clients looking for more and more precise content right now? Or is it like they're happy with the generalized content you guys do and analysis, stuff like that?
I think they want unique content is what I think they want. And that's difficult to do in a market where, you know, the big stories often dictate, you know, we're going to be writing about the same thing a lot of times that Beer Marketers Insights and Craft Business Daily or Beer Business Daily are writing about. It just happens sometimes. But I also think that the three of us, they are all great competitors and great publications. And I think the three of us are at our best on those random days where there isn't the big story, but we've all got something different. I love those days where it's like, we've got something they don't have, they've got something we don't have. And, you know, it all just like somebody can be like, whoa, look at all this stuff.
Is the content competition good for you guys? Where you're like you're saying, we're talking to the other guys. Something good for industry? Do you see it more and more growing? Do you see other smaller B2B media coming through the market, or is it hard for them to get into?
I think it's hard to get into. I really do think it's hard to get into. But I think competition is good too, because, you know, they're all very established, and we're still fairly young in comparison to both of those publications. So, but I also think that, you know, we can build on stuff that they break, and they can build on things that we break. And it's just the natural progression. And, you know, one of the funnest things to do is be in a press conference situation with those guys, because we're all asking questions, and, you know, we're not a team, but it's, you know, it feels good to have that moment where, you know, we're all working hard for the same goal.
Yeah, we have that, and we try not to compete each other, stuff like that. But I understand that the kind of leverage. Is it any kind? I was talking about the Spanish one. Is it something that you guys be interested in to start that kind of market? Because I tried to find some Spanish business content in Mexico, stuff like that. And there's none. There's like, it's very, very small yet. There's nothing big going on. Is it something that you guys, something that you want to build? Because as you know, like Corona is getting bigger out there. There's more and more people in that market. Is it something, that segment that you guys are trying to see, focus on maybe in the future?
I think it should be one of our focuses in the future. I don't have any good answers right now on it, but it's something that John Craven and, you know, people who run the company should be definitely looking at.
So are you doing any Spanish course or stuff like that?
I should be. I'm terrible at Spanish at this point, but I should be, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we're trying to do that. We might do one. I speak Spanish, so we might do one in a couple of months. We're trying to, like, once a month, just to make sure that stuff like that, so see how the market is. But we're getting very good feedback from the Spanish market right now, so we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you see the landscape in a couple of years? I mean, like I was telling in the beginning, so 6 years ago, you guys started working now, more and more podcasts, more stuff like that. But what's the landscape? Do you see it a mix of B2B, B2C, to make sure that you people understand more how we call it here, how do you make the sausage? You know, it's like people don't want to know how to understand the sausage. They just want to eat it. They don't understand all the work, stuff like that. So how do you see the landscape in a couple of years? B2B, B2C, B2B focus, how does it work?
I don't know.
Dude, you the future, man. You guys have all that data, man.
Yeah, if you're asking about the future of the beverage industry, yeah, like, or yeah, the beer industry in the U.S., like, I think, you know, it has gone through so many different shifts in the very short time that I've been here.
True.
Where craft was on a nonstop roll to where now craft is just eking out growth, and there's still a number of, you know, Lester Jones from the NBWA, we were on a call or like something webinar yesterday where he brought up the numbers of brewery openings in each state. And he was like, how can this be? Like craft is not winning right now. And he said something like, Brewbound and Beer Business Daily and Beer Marketers Insights, you all need to do a better job of telling people not to be opening breweries or whatever. And it's like, anybody that's probably listened to me has heard me say, like, I am so glad that I am on this side and not the brewery side. Like, I would be rather be reporting on it because I can see how tough it is. I've talked to people and I know how tough it is. And so that's a very roundabout way of saying, I think that the gap between openings and closings of breweries is going to close up. I think that we could reach a point where there are more closures than openings.
Okay.
I think we'll see a lot more consolidation. I will not be shocked to see one of the major soda companies purchase a BevAlc company. I mean, we've already seen Monster acquire Canarchy, and they're already rolling out alcoholic beverages. Coke has its partnerships. Boston and Pepsi have their partnership. Keurig's got, Dr. Pepper's got a $50 million investment in Athletic Brewing.
Yeah.
So if that's what you're asking about, that's a lot of what I see is more consolidation, harder route to market as far as consolidation in the middle tier happening, and it being harder for smaller brewers to get into distribution. I think that there will be a larger focus on at the tap room, and there should be for smaller brewers. It's we're just seeing like the beginning of some really choppy seas. And I don't have good answers right now of where things go from here.
Is your content going to be changed to focus on that? Like, are you guys thinking about doing more B2B content, maybe a different newsletter or maybe in different stuff to make sure to focus on that? Because that's what we're thinking more and more is like, we have our B2B newsletter, stuff like that, but we're getting too many questions on a daily basis. Like, what's next? What do I do next? Is this something that you guys thinking about? We're thinking about doing a only newsletter and focus hear all this podcast about sales and distribution and like just do that like it's super nerdy just to get you 2-3 years, because that's the questions we're getting every day.
I think we're super nerdy as, okay, as it that. Is, but yeah, I mean, when we do live events, so we do a lot of those conversations where we try to get the decision makers in the room and hash out some of these things. And, you know, we'll do it in Denver for the Great American Beer Festival in September. We'll do it in December for Brewbound Live, which is our end of year business conference in California. And I, you know, we'll do it on the podcast. We'll do it on video. You know, those are conversations that we're always thinking about and always having. So yeah, all those things will definitely be a focus.
So what is the one of the biggest stories you see right now coming to that? I mean, we saw Sapporo, we saw the company getting bought. The weed company that we saw, there's no here in Canada, they're from Canada, again, they're from Quebec, Ontario. I think that weed company that bought it. So what do you see? Where do you see the trends right now besides the opening of more tap rooms, stuff like that? Do you see something weird kind of going on through the vines?
Yeah, a couple of different things. So consolidation, both at the brewery level and at the wholesale level. I think that we're going to see more partnering of small brewers. I think that, I mean, that's already been a story that's well written this year, and it'll continue. I believe more of like the larger brewers will shed some of their craft brands. I think Anheuser-Busch is probably only getting started in that. I could see Molson Coors doing that at some point. And the other thing I see is a pretty large turnover in leadership in craft breweries in the US. Just about all the major breweries have seen some level of turnover this year. There's, you know, 20 plus year employees who are retiring and passing on the baton. There are people like Steve Fetchheimer from New Belgium who led that company to really unprecedented growth for it, you know, a couple of million barrel plus years, who is now on the sidelines. He ended his tenure there. There's turnover at Sierra Nevada. Their CEO is retiring. So like the big brewers are all seeing these shifts in who the leaders are. And then you've got Tilray coming in and buying craft breweries. And so I think there's a real question of like what the next chapter of craft brewing is in the US, because a lot of the evangelists are getting out. There are so many fewer of those old voices. So the question I have is like, who are the new voices? Like, and does the consumer even care? Because that was the start, you know, of craft beer in the 80s and 90s and middle 2000s was the brewery founder story. And I think that I don't know that resonates with the current generation of consumers.
I believe so. We have a company here called Trou du Diable, and it was owned by Molson. It was a huge, I remember 10 years, it was bought maybe 7 years ago, and it was a huge, I remember going to events and people were pissed about it, stuff like that. And after 7 years, people don't care. They still make good beer. People drink it. Molson still owns it. Unibrew, Steam and Sapporo. Pretty much the same thing. I don't see the consumer going crazy or that. I mean, this is, like I said, it's between you and me. We're the one going crazy about stuff like that. People inside are going stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Stone Cell.
Yeah.
So every year, like the first time I saw really like a muted reaction to a brewery sale was Bell's. So when Bell's was acquired by Kirin Lion Little World Beverages, it didn't get the you know, oh, I'm never drinking Bell's again, or that. I'm sure there were some people who said that, but it wasn't to the level of, say, when I started and Wicked Weed sold to Anheuser-Busch, and people were breweries were pulling out of their festival and consumers were saying, I'm never buying it again. It didn't get any of that reaction. So, and now it's just, I hate to say, like, it's just such a, like, survival, you know, like, I never begrudge anybody for selling their business. To me, I look at it like, you know, this is a hard business, you know,
and if, the bills, man.
If you can be profitable in it or, you know, find some exit to retirement, good for you. You know, like that, I hope to retire one day too.
Dude, we're journalists. There's no way we're retiring.
I know. So like I already screwed that up.
No. One of the things that I talk to other people is like the regional content, like B2B regional content. Like as a national magazine, we're a national magazine in our province. You're a national magazine in the US. Is there more and more focus on trying maybe to do regional content for regional stuff? You know, like one of the things that we always think of is Axios. That's it. They have like 85 different emails, those guys, and they go Atlanta. Is something you guys are maybe thinking about something like that? Do you think yourself doing that with a team, different team hitting to, let's say, focus only in this section, because when Reyes do distribution up there for New York, it doesn't matter for them. You know, it's like,
yeah. I wish we had the resources to do that. I could see it. I could see it working for someone. If we had the resources to do it, it'd be awesome. But it's also, you know, that's just like such a level of support that you would need to do it and do it well, that it would be challenging, but it would be cool to see that.
So how come not too many Canadian stories in your Brewbound? We need more Canadian stories, man. We have a lot of great, a lot of weird, crazy stories, man. Maple for us is the craziest stories every day, man.
Reach out.
Maple syrup is the craziest beside that. But anyways, Justin, I just want to say thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
I'll hopefully see you at Vegas this year, next year, sorry. Talk like that. And what are you guys hitting right now? What kind of festivals are you getting here right now? Besides, I know there's a distribution company soon, Brew Talks also going on.
So we're doing Brew Talks in Denver during the Great American Beer Festival, and that's September 21st. And that bar event will be a couple of hours before the actual event. And then we do our Brewbound Live business conference in Marina Del Rey at the end of the year, and that's December 6th and 7th. We'll be at the NBWA annual convention in
Vegas,
Las Vegas, yep, in October. I'm heading the Beer Institute meeting. I think it's October. It might be September. I can't remember at this point. Yeah, we'll be hitting a lot of different things in the next few months.
So how many people reach out of you when you go to an event? How many people reach to you every event? Do you got like us, we have like 80 emails, 80 high callers saying like requests to go see them to their booth, to go eat, drink like that. Do you get those kind of emails, like people asking you for consigliati, that's what we call them?
We get some of that, yeah. But maybe not to that level, but we get some of that, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, Justin, I just want to say thank you very much. Keep up the great work. As I said, we're a big fan here. We always follow you, whatever you do. And hopefully see you somewhere in the U.S. and hopefully in Canada one day, stuff like that. Thank you very much for your time, man.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.